Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Another edition of the Talking Mets podcast. I'm your host, Mike Silva, here on this Sunday, December the 18th. Of course, you can check out the show live, like tonight, or on replay at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, or whatever podcasting service you desire. Hope everybody's doing well. About a week before Christmas, a couple of weeks before the new year, the final Talking Mets podcast of 2016, provided that nothing big happens over the next couple of weeks. But I will not be broadcasting on the next two Sundays, as of course the holidays will prevent that. A little break. It's possible that there'll be some news with Jay Bruce potentially getting traded, maybe potentially a bullpen signing. But right now it looks like until the Bruce situation gets resolved, nothing's going to happen with the Mets. But we'll get that to that tonight. Of course, I'll be listening to what you have to say at 646-716-8187. Start taking calls in about 10 minutes or so. And I brought back, and I figured I'd end the 2016 podcasting year. Season was over. By doing another live show. The comments from the first show were great. Feedback was great. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I wasn't sure how something like this was going to go over with the community, and we had a lot of great calls. We had some funny calls. We had some individuals who made some great points. We had some fun, and I want to do that again. So again, the number is 646-716-8187. Now, I know that there's not a ton going on in the Mets universe, but I wanted to throw a couple of fun things out that maybe will at least, when the phone lines light up, and they're starting to light up already, so you don't want to wait, the wait shouldn't be too long, but 646-716-8187. I want a couple of different things. Certainly make your comments. So whatever you have planned on talking about the Mets, you can talk about whatever you want. But the first thing I used to do when I had NYBaseballDigest.com, and when I really got that site rocking and rolling, was to do the New York Baseball Person or Man of the Year. I know politically correct, you go Person of the Year. And I would put up four or five individuals or events or things like that, and I'd have the fans vote on it. Then I'd give what the fans wanted, my thoughts, things like that. Now, similar to Time Magazine Man of the Year, it's not necessarily for the MVP or the individual who had the best season. So we'll do that for the Mets tonight. The Man of the Year for the Mets is the individual, in your opinion, for good, bad, or indifferent, made the most news in 2016, had an impact. And although everybody's going to say Cespedes, and that would be a great choice because in 2016, he signed twice. He signed with the Mets in January. He signed with the Mets in November. He's had an impact on the team both on the field and at the gate and potentially going forward over the next 4 years. But there are other options out there, and I'm going to give you who I think my man of the year is or my news story of the year. So I want to hear who you think that individual should be. I want to hear who or what you want under your Mets Christmas tree or holiday tree, depending on your denomination, faith, or what you celebrate. What would you like to see Sandy Alderson do, if not over the next couple of weeks into 2017? What would you like to see him give you for the holiday season? We'll see what some of the thoughts you guys have. Again, 646-716-8187. Again, I'll get to you guys in just a couple of minutes. Hang on. I know there's a couple of people online already, so Hang on, I will get to you. I do want to set this up with a couple of things, in my opinion. The Mets, there's been some concerns about the lack of activity. And, oh, now Jay Bruce and his $13 million salary is really holding up the Mets from making moves. That is a problem. However, I started to really take a step back and look at the bullpen market, because right now that's the only market that I believe they're going to go in and maybe sign somebody. I don't know what kind of deal they're willing to do, certainly multi-year deals because of the lack of success they've had with that over the last couple of times they did that, Bastardo, DJ Carrasco. Doesn't sound like that's the direction the Mets want to go, regardless of the payroll situation and Bruce's $13 million. There are, the long and short of it is there are a number of right-handed relievers that the Mets could hang on and probably wait till January to sign. I mean, the name that I keep going back to that I don't know what his market would be. He made $5 million last year, and I know they were interested in him at the deadline, is Joe Smith. Joe Smith, to me, is more of a situational reliever against right-handed batters. He was during his first tenure here at the Mets. I know he's evolved a little bit since then, but to me, that is a situational guy. Another name that is probably you could wait for, or maybe get an even more of a reduced value, is Peter Moylan. Used to pitch for the Braves with Kansas City last year. Neftali Feliz is out there. David Hernandez. I know Greg Holland is somebody that everybody would like to see. But again, that guy like that, anybody, and you saw that with Ziegler when he signed with the Marlins, a guy who wants to close is going to get a deal to close. Why would you take a deal to be the setup guy, especially on 1 year, when your value and your price for closing is so much higher? I see some of the San Francisco relievers, Santiago Casilla, Sergio Romo. I'm not sure how excited I am with that. Either of those names, they'll sound very Hansel Robles-like. Jim Henderson, I know they let him off the 40-man, but you could bring him back on a minor league deal. So there's some names out there, and if you go to MLB trade rumors, you'll see a number of the right-handed relievers. Now, the lefty situation, that's different. You're really down to about four quality lefties. So if the Mets don't want to go with Smoker, Edgen, that ilk, you have Jerry Blevins, who right now, with all the three-year deals being taken, Mike Dunn, not a bad reliever, but Mike Dunn, not exactly a stud, getting a three-year deal. You can't see why Jerry Blevins, and maybe I know a Boone Logan, who's not great against righties, why they wouldn't get three-year deals. Now, Javier Lopez and J.P. Howell are older. That's probably more what the Mets are looking for year-to-year with a lefty. That will be interesting to see how that develops. They may have to pounce on that market soon because I could see that drying up. It is interesting, though, that Blevins hasn't signed, which makes you wonder if he wants to come back. And if the Mets have discussed with him the need to kind of move Bruce. I know at MetsMemorizedOnline.com there was, again, another post earlier today about the potential of the Mets revisiting. Now that the Orioles have pulled the Mark Trumbo deal, the Bruce for Brock deal. I like Brock. I brought up Brock's name a couple of weeks ago. Came from San Diego. He's only making $1 million. He's under control for a few more years. It would require the Orioles to take on a significant amount of dollars with the almost like the trade-off with Bruce for Brock. But if that's the best you're going to get, and you're going to dump the $13 million on Bruce, I think that's a pretty good deal. I think Brock would be a good arm, better than anything that's out there on the free agent market right now. So that's where I'm at. I don't think everybody should panic. Nobody has won a World Series or a division in December, despite the fact that everybody's going gaga about the Nationals and the Cubs and so on and so forth. Second thing, so before I get to the phone lines, and I do want to get into Bud Selig later. I'll bring that up later on. I'll save that for later because it's something that's really annoyed me, and I know it's not Mets-centric, but I'll talk about Selig later. My man of the year, or Mets person of the year, I'm going to say it's David Wright. And here's why. Because David Wright, at this point, is almost a bit of a tragedy because his body is breaking down at a time where he could just fit right into this Mets lineup and not have to shoulder the burden now that Cespedes is here. Something that was debated and talked about for so many years when the Delgados and the Beltrons were moving out and it was really becoming Wright's team, Wright's lineup. Not only that, with the money owed, the $20 million, we don't know if Wright's ever going to play again. Is he going to retire? insurance does pick a lot of that, 75% I've heard or so up. So you're looking at about $15, $16 million of potential income the Mets have to spend if they wanted to in order to offset Wright if he doesn't play. Now, if he plays, you've got yourself a $20 million, in my opinion, platoon player, a guy who could probably hit left-handed pitching, probably can't play every day, probably can't catch up with some of the top arms out there, and is really, and I don't know how he's going to heal from this surgery, but is a defensive liability at third base, especially with the arm. That, to me, is the story of 2016, because going forward, this could become clumsy and awkward. If Wright doesn't want to retire and there's something left, I mean, what are you going to do? I don't even know if there's a guy who could play off the bench. Not only that, Terry Collins has shown that he will go with the veteran to their detriment, especially guys that he's managed over the course of his tenure here. And I know it's not necessarily apples to apples, but Bobby Parnell, think about Bobby Parnell in 2015. The guy showed you he had nothing, and Collins ran him out there, and he actually cost them a game late in 2015 that potentially, while they were fighting for home field with the Dodgers, could have been a problem. I mean, I know home field isn't in baseball isn't like the NBA, but Bobby Parnell, a game against Philadelphia in Philadelphia late in the year, I think blew a game at some point, and he blew games earlier in the season when he came back, even when things were going well. But Collins kept going to him until he realized, and they pulled him off the postseason roster, there was nothing there. Now, David Wright could be that person. You know, if he's struggling out there, if he's not hitting and Collins keeps running him out there, and worse yet, puts him in the middle of the lineup, that could be a big deal. That could be detrimental to the team. So this is a big story. That's why it's my man or person of the year. And that's why I voted for David Wright. Now, I want to hear what you guys have to say. The number is 646-716-8187. I'm going to take a quick break. One of the things that, and I'll get to the calls right after the break. We've got some individuals on hold. One of the things I will do throughout the program, as I will be on air, if the calls warrant it, until about 8:30, if we warrant it. Last time we did. So that's something to keep in mind. I will stay on the air, try to take a little bit more calls. If the calls dry up, if the show's not going anywhere, we'll see how this goes. Maybe we'll end it a little bit early. I know there's not a ton going on. So anyway, but what I'll do is I'll splice in some highlights. Nothing really from a logical standpoint, just some highlights or some moments in 2016 that I remember that were kind of fun, all positive, to make up the 2016 New York Mets. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. I'm your host, Mike Silva. It is the live edition of the Talking Mets podcast. So as we wrap up 2016, call in 646-716-8187. Send me a tweet, Mike Silva Media, if you like, and you can listen on iTunes, SoundCloud, or whatever podcasting service you desire. We'll be right back.
And Syndergaard hits one in the air to deep right center. Back goes Puig to the warning track. Back at the wall. It's out of here! Noah Syndergaard's second major league home run. Cologne opened the floodgates on Saturday night, and the Mets pitchers have been storming with the bats ever since. Syndergaard's first hit of the season. He gives himself and the Mets a 1-0 lead.
And the Mets have two aboard for Syndergaard, who hit a bomb his first time up. 2-2.
And he swings and flies one to deep center field. Back goes Peterson near the wall. It's out of here! Noah Syndergaard with his second home run of the night. A three-run shot. Hello, Walt Harrell. Syndergaard with a two-home run game. He matches the crazy crab. And the Mets lead it 4-2.
We're back, Talking Mets podcast, the final show of the year, taking calls 646-716-8187. And we're going to kick it off here. And 631, we got a Long Islander, 9899 is the last four digits. Give me your name, and obviously you're from Suffolk County. You're on the air with Mike Silva.
Hello?
Hello, how are you? You're on with Mike Silva. Hello?
Hi, this is Michael Reese from Long Island.
How you doing?
Good, how are you? Hope you have a nice holiday season.
Same to you. What's on your mind, man?
I'll give you my man of the year. How about Bartolo Colon? That home run was legendary.
And you're giving away a little teaser there. I have that highlight later on in the program. That is, and I see how some individuals are still on Twitter pretty unhappy that Bart left, but for $12.5 million.
Me too.
I don't really know if the Mets could justify, especially with the payroll situation. Even without a payroll situation, that's an awful lot for someone who's probably or potentially not going to be in the rotation at some point this year.
Mm-hmm. Now, right. One guy I want to see the Mets get is that Brad Barkai from the Orioles. I was looking up his highlights earlier. He's pretty good. Him, Reed, Familia, back-to-back-to-back. I mean, what do you think?
Love it. I brought his name up. The other name I had brought up, and I know he was a scrap heap guy, for lack of a better word, that the Blue Jays took in the Rule 5, was Joe Biagiano. But, Brad Brock is somebody that I definitely I would do the deal. At this point, it seems that Bruce's market is just not developing. And maybe it's because there's still a glut of power hitters out there. Maybe a lot of teams saw what Mets fans saw, which is once he got out of Cincinnati, which is a notoriously hitter's ballpark, he struggled. I think it's a little unfair to judge him on 6 or 7 weeks. I was never a big Jay Bruce guy. I was okay with the deal. He's got power. The Mets needed offense. It didn't seem like they were going to give up a lot. I didn't want them to give up Dilson Herrera. I thought it would maybe be a situation where because they had the option, and I don't think the Reds really wanted the payroll. I don't think they wanted to pick up the salary. They could get away with maybe a low-level player. So I thought Herrera, who I liked, who I wanted to see, or maybe be part of a package for somebody a little bit better. But they took a chance. At the end of the day, I don't think that's going to kill the Mets. And I would go for the Brock deal. Yeah, I agree. The numbers are there, and he's only making $1 million. And here's the most important part. He's controllable until 2019, and you don't know. I mean, Addison Reed is on his last year here. Addison Reed will probably leave via free agency for a closer gig after the year. Maybe the Mets, depending on the Familia situation and how he does. Forget about the domestic violence and the suspension and all that. You just don't know what to think of Familia after the postseason. I personally don't feel that Familia is a problem. I mean, the guy saved 50 games. I understand what happened in the World Series. I've said this a billion times. If you listen every week, you probably heard it, but I'll say it again. The World Series was kind of freaky. Short of the Alex Gordon home run, that stuff happens. The Connor Gillespie thing, I think the Mets bullpen was overused to a point where you could see maybe they were on fumes or Familia was on fumes a little bit. Familia was off, I thought, from the start. I go back to the preparation and really – I don't want to hear about being overused in the prior year of pitching late into the season. I want to bring up, and by the way, call in the number 646-716-8187. Like to hear from you. Like I said, we'll see where this goes, how many calls we get. I plan to be here till 8:30 doing this live show. We'll see how this works. We had a great response, like I said, that Thursday night winter meeting show. Let's see how this goes. I'm going to go back. I was going back to some of the mailbox, which I did not get to during the last program. And Dwight Manning emailed me after the program, and he brought up a good point, and I wanted to discuss it briefly here. And Dwight's question essentially was, what were the Mets' plans with Nimmo? And Dwight said he may not even make the team this year, but do they still see him as a future contributor? Do other teams see him as someone that is worth giving up something useful for? Dwight says, I just get the feeling he will not get enough leash to prove himself to the Mets. I like the kid. He put up some good at-bats together down the stretch for the Mets last year. I will personally tell you this. I don't know, and Nimmo was a bit of a stretch. I mean, they drafted him based on tools or what they saw. He comes from an area where there's no major leaguers. And they saw tools. They liked the on-base. I'm sure they liked the baseball acumen and things like that. He's got energy. You could tell he's a good kid. But somebody in minor league baseball that I know had spoken to Wally Backman last year who felt he was not a center fielder. I didn't get the feeling he was all that great in the corners. He's not really showing any power. And for me, your corner outfielders, your outfielders in general, they're not going to play center field. If they're not going to give you defense in center field. You almost have to have power. And I don't see that with Nimmo. Nimmo's really profiling to me, and I know it's too soon. He's young as a backup, energy guy, guy you could sub in. I did not see somebody that other teams would say, that's the guy I think I could bring in, and you know he's going to be the centerpiece of a deal. If he were, Jonathan Lucroy would be with the Mets. Cause maybe they didn't see Darno as that. So to answer Dwight, I don't think anyone's overly excited about Nimmo. Now, does that mean he's useless? No. I mean, and I could be wrong. He's still young. He certainly has a good attitude. He's left-handed, which doesn't really help you with this club. He's got so many left-handed bats. I mean, you know, when you think about it, with Bruce here and with Granderson and Duda, you know, you got the switch hitters in Reyes and so forth. You need more right-handed bats than left-handed bats. So to me, that's where I stand on Nimmo. Again, the number is 646-716-8187. Feel free to call in. Like to hear from you. I have some other mailbag questions that I'll get to. I do want to get to, I said, as I was showing in the open, I'd mentioned Bud Selig. And I know this isn't a Mets-centric thing, but I had to bring it up because I saw that if you all remember, and you certainly probably do, Wallace Matthews, who writes for New York Sports Today now, and the same publication online site that our buddy Rich Mancuso, who was on the program a couple of weeks ago, writes for, had said he's giving up his Hall of Fame vote because of Selig's election into the Hall of Fame, the connection with steroids. And if Wallace wants to do that, I have no problem with that. I know he's been getting torched on Twitter. I don't agree with it. I think the writers make too much of the steroid stuff. That's not the point. This is not to bash Wallace Matthews. What amazes me is that everybody that's talked about Bud Selig and the problem they have with Bud Selig getting elected in the Hall of Fame for steroids never brings up that Bud Selig, along with Jerry Reinsdorf, but it was really Bud Selig that spearheaded the collusion of the 80s that cost the owners $280 million, led to eventually the work stoppage of 94 and the cancellation of the World Series, but also work stoppages in 1990, a short brief one in 1985, players like Tim Raines, Jack Morris, many players who were free agents during those years could not get offers. If you all remember, here was Tim Raines, who couldn't get a single offer on the market, wound up sitting out the first month of the year because in those days, if you weren't signed by a specific date, you couldn't play the first month of the season. You had to wait till May 1st. Who figured out why that was the case? Again, probably to force players to take a contract and take away leverage in negotiation. And you think about $280 million, and I have talked to former players, and it took a while for the players that were entitled to that money to get it. And yet, look, guys still made very good money in the 80s. However, there's a lot of guys making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 playing baseball. Again, 1980s money, it's probably at that point a lot of you who were around and working, were like, I wish I made that in the 1980s. But there are guys that still have to work today. I know a former Met that I'm friendly with that sells beer and wine. And, you know, he's not bitter about it. But this is a guy who played quite a few years with the Mets and won a championship with them. So you say to yourself, he's just a regular guy like you and I. So what bothers me, and I will get to the phone lines because I know we have some people on hold, is that nobody ever says the reason I don't like that guy or don't want him in the Hall of Fame is because he took away the right to earn, which is in a capitalist free society like this country, from the players. Because everybody looks at the players as these overpaid, wealthy commodities. They take the owner's side when it's the owners who are the most obtuse part of this whole equation. They're the guys who are trying to stifle salaries. Now they're paying for it on the back end, and they've paid for it, and now it's that's not the case. Salaries have well exceeded a certain point. But always remember something like this with Bud Selig and guys like that. Anytime you get angry about players making money, remember, and you all who are listening, and I know this is not a Mets thing, but I wanted to get this off my chest before I forgot, you all listen, contribute to a pool of revenue, whether it's you going to the games, whether you're purchasing equipment, whatever it is that's MLB related, the app, when you put money into MLB Advanced Media, you're putting into a pool of money that the players are entitled to. The owners are, but the players are. So when you say the players should make less, do you want the owners to take a bigger portion of that salary? Do you want to honor the legacy of a commissioner that pretty much was on an oil field and stepped in 1994 after a coup against the commissioner, a guy that was hell-bent on keeping salaries down? And that's where I want to see the first member of the media, and they nobody ever says it. The reason I'm upset with Bud Selig making the Hall of Fame is because he took money out of the players' pockets. I haven't heard that yet. Anyway, let's get to the phone lines. Looks like we got New Jersey 732-8281 is the last four digits. What's your name, and where in New Jersey are you from?
Hey, Mike. It's Chris from Nutley, Vitamin CM on the site.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. For my player of the year, I'm going to go with the second half anyway, Asdrubal Cabrera. How tough he was
down the
stretch. I mean, he definitely put up the best offensive numbers down the stretch, including Cespedes. And the toughness that guy showed was tougher than any Met I've seen in quite a while. So he's my guy.
And that home run against the Phillies, the three-run homer to win the game, overlooked a little bit, but they don't make the playoffs without that win.
Yeah, he was
a lot of people forget about that
game.
Yeah, that's the kind of player they need. What would you like to see under your Mets holiday tree or Christmas tree, whatever it be?
I mean, I'd really like to see another reliever or even move a couple pieces around and get another bat, maybe a speed guy or something. But I think they're still going to struggle to score runs this year no matter what.
I think you're right on that. I think here's the thing. If Duda comes back to form and Cespedes is Cespedes, and let's assume Granderson Granderson in center, Conforto right. If Conforto goes and becomes, I'm not saying Conforto hits 330 and what they think he could be, but if he becomes the Conforto that you saw more in 2015, Reyes gives you typically, I think, what you think you're going to get. And Cabrera, I mean, there may be a bit of a drop-off, but let's say it's not too drastic. It's not a terrible offense. The problem, I think, is it's home run-centric. And those kind of teams, and I forgot Neil Walker and all this, those kind of teams can be very feast or famine. But let's face it, the Mets pitchers do what you expect them to do. You put up one crooked number in a game, and I mean, you're in good shape, right? 3-4 run inning. Think about that.
No, I agree. I think if I could wish for one thing for Christmas, it would be better than average help for the Mets.
Cannot complain about that. Well, thanks for the call. Happy holidays. Appreciate you popping on. Thank you for the kind words in the comment section, and continue to listen, and I appreciate everything you guys do. Alrighty? That was our buddy Vitamin over there at Metsmerized Online. To answer, there was a question in the comment section. I am scrolling at this time. Yes, I will. If you want to put a question in the comment section and you rather not call in, I'm okay with that. But I do want you to call in. The number is 646-716-8187. Don't be nervous. I don't bite. The guy who should be nervous is me. I'm putting myself out here live for people to ridicule me, which I did get my first negative feedback in the comment section about the sound quality of the show, which I guess to a certain degree I understand. Now, remember one thing, and I'll just want to explain it. I'm using what's called a Yeti Blue microphone. It's a pretty good microphone. But I'm on a service called Blog Talk Radio, which is basically voice over IP. So I'm never going to sound like radio. I cannot, because I'm not pre-recording it, clean up whatever issues Blog Talk may have that night. Again, this is basically conference call technology to make a podcast. So sometimes those little things that I clean up when it isn't live, I can't do. But I'll continue to look for – I mean, I do have better equipment, a mixer and things like that. That takes a lot to set up. And for what we're doing, the sound quality, again, because you're using the same service, is not going to get exponentially better. But I'll continue to listen and try to make improvements. And if you don't like the sound quality, I apologize. I'm not sitting in a 50,000-watt studio, you know, here. And I've worked on in radio, so I know the sound quality differences, and I'm not going to get all that I'm not going to get all that technical from a sound quality type of situation. And again, the number is 646-716-1187. Give me a call if you like. And I do have – let me go to the mailbag here. I had an interesting mailbag from Joe D. last time. So, okay. So here's a mailbag. It's from Anthony. So I don't know who Anthony is. I know it's from Anthony. And Anthony's question or comment is, assuming Harvey's healthy and pitching well in 2017, do you expect him to be traded by next offseason heading into the 2018 season or perhaps at the 2017 trade deadline? If so, what type of return could the Mets expect? Prospect package only, young talent. Can you foresee another starting pitcher being dealt? I'm going to take that into two parts. And what's bothered me for a long time, especially with Mets fans, and maybe I'm just using this subset on Twitter, but I listen not as much to talk radio on WFAN. I try to listen to MLB Network Radio, NBA Radio. I try to stay away from local talk radio because it's just not all that good anymore. There's such a willingness at all various points of the last few years to trade pitchers away, and at times capriciously. Even when Dylan Gee and Jonathan Neese were part of the rotation. I know you're all like, oh, Dylan Gee and Jonathan Neese, why is he bringing them up? I always liked Dylan Gee. I thought he was a solid arm. I'm not saying he was a stud, but he was exactly what you wanted out of a fifth starter. He had moxie. I personally met him, and I thought he was a good guy, and I liked him when I had a chance to interview him. Jonathan Neese was aggravating and frustrating because I think he could have been even better. And ironically, Andy Martino, not one of my favorite members of the media, no longer at the Daily News, was bringing up or talking about how the fact that during the R.A. Dickey negotiations with Toronto in 2012, how the Mets could have gotten the same package for Neese, and he was going back to the point he made at that time that that was a bad move, that the Mets should have pushed Neese instead of Dickey. And that's just silly because I liked R.A. Dickey. I know that he rubbed his teammates the wrong way because it became a lot about him in the clubhouse. I'm not going to get into all that because I don't know who's right, who's wrong. It doesn't really matter. And that is true. That is a fact. There was a large contingent of members of the clubhouse who weren't fans of Dickey. Dickey was a guy that had a career year. They picked off the scrap heap, wanted to make a lot of money, was entitled to it. And the team was still very much close to the Madoff situation. So they had a young lefty, I think he was 26 at the time, Neese, under control. So that's a little sidebar, but that is why I disagree with Martino. That deal was the right deal. You trade Dickey in that situation. Why Toronto gave up so much? Mets gain, Toronto's loss. But everybody, and the main point is that fans are so intent on just giving away pitchers or trading pitchers. Like when before Syndergaard and Matz and everybody came up, they just like, well, when Syndergaard and Matz come up, you could just get rid of Neese and G. And I was like, guys, slow down. You don't know what these guys are going to be. And I keep saying it. And guys, anytime you want to trade a pitcher, whether it's Harvey, and I'll get to what I think about Harvey, or Gzelman, or Lugo, or Wheeler, remember something. You're going to need 8 starting pitchers this year, at least. You're probably going to need 9 or 10 with doubleheaders and things like that. Do you want, in September, to revisit 2007, where guys like Brian Lawrence and Philip Humber, who never developed, guys like that are making starts for the Mets? Because when the Mets had guys like Gzelman and Lugo, who are legit prospects, it turns out to be, pretty good 6, 7, and 8. A lot of teams don't have that. You start pecking away from that depth. Unless you're really putting together a package for something special. And I don't know what the Mets are going to get special out there. I don't think there's a special hitter. I mean, you talk about maybe McCutcheon and things of that nature. That's one thing. But when you bring in a McCutcheon and then you rob your pitching depth, the last thing I remember, especially for the 2007-2008 Mets, was not offense that was the problem. It was getting people out. So, you know, keep that in mind. But I digress. So with Harvey is this. Can I see the Mets trading Harvey midseason this year? No. The only time I could see that happen is if they were out of the race and they were floundering and he was having a really good year and it was a chance to recalibrate in some way. If the Mets are having a really bad year, either everybody went south, the injury situation happened, or it's an extreme. I cannot see the Mets having an awful year. This is a good team. I think Harvey is a guy that if he gets healthy at the end of this year coming up and he's done well, depending on how things go, I could see them trading them in the offseason. I wonder if there's a little luster off of Harvey because of the health issues, although thoracic outlet syndrome isn't the end of the world. Remember, this is a guy as recent as last November, pitched dominantly in Game 5 of the World Series. It's a year ago. I mean, sometimes the people sit around and act like the guy hasn't been good for 5 years. Has he been a disappointment because he hasn't stayed on the field? Yeah, that's disappointing. But be careful about trading. Look, the goal is to win a championship here, and they have a window. And sometimes we like to play fantasy baseball moogle more than we like to win championships. So to me, and I know with the new collective bargaining agreement, the compensation with free agents may not be as lucrative, so there is a desire to make a deal. To me, you ride this Harvey thing out as long as you can. Now, all bets are off if you're not in the race or things turn sour and ugly and things of that nature. So that's something to think about a little bit. So, again, the number is 646-716-8187. I want to take a quick break, give you another highlight from the 2016 season. We're going to scour the comments in the MetsMemorizedOnline.com thread. Give me a question, a comment, anything you want. Let me know who your man or person of the year is. I'd be curious to hear from you, and I would love to have you call in. And by the way, I did see that you guys – I'm not trying to give out your number. Maybe if there's a lady listening, you do want your number given out. I'm just trying to get you – I just don't have the process of having a screener. So I give you the last four digits and the area code. I mean, I guess somebody could figure out the other three, but – does it really matter? But anyway, I don't want to give out your number, and if you don't want me to, maybe I'll do the last two digits. I'll figure things out. Anyway, you're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We're wrapping up the 2016 season or year, and Talking Mets baseball here on this cold, wintry New York weekend. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. We'll be.
And Familia's save streak is squarely on the line. Bases loaded, nobody out. Max Caesar coming up. 1-2 coming. And he nubs one down to first. Ronnie coming home with it, gets the out there, and that's all. And he grounds one down to third. Reyes goes to second. Walker on to first. In the third. Scooped out by Ronnie, and the ball game is over. What an escape by Jerry Familia, and the Mets win the game 2-1. Unbelievable ninth inning.
We're back. Talking Mets podcast live call-in show 646-716-8187. Scouring the comments here. Putty, a Granderson supporter is his handle, and he talks about some bench upgrades and brings up Kelly Johnson. I like Kelly Johnson. I think that would be nice to see him come back. I'm not sure, again, with this 40-man roster, and I really should bring up the Mets 40-man roster here while we're on it because I'm not going to remember everything. I think the 40-man roster situation is really a part of the problem. I mean, you had to protect guys like Nitto and so on and so forth, and I think that creates somewhat of a problem for guys like Kelly Johnson. But it seems like the Mets are pretty content with what they have. I think Reyes moving into somewhat of a utility role probably takes some of that away from Kelly Johnson. I think Kelly Johnson's a guy who actually, I thought, defensively played pretty well. He has that power that you need, left-handed power. He was making progress under Kevin Long, and he's versatile. And I know that's something that a lot of members of the Mets organization like and want from players going forward. So I personally think that the way the Mets are going to go, because of the 40-man roster situation, which, by the way, give Michael Mayer, who does a great job covering the minors, credit. Back in the summer, he brought this up. Because if you're going to sign a couple of relievers, now Bruce, trade for reliever, that's one for one. But if you want to sign another reliever like a Blevins, you need to find room. And there isn't any room right now. So how can you – I mean, Kelly Johnson's not going to come in on a minor league deal. I cannot see that. And it's possible, it's funny, that the Braves will wind up taking him back because the Braves are making some moves to act as a contender. I think they liked what they saw out of their offense late in the year. They're moving into the new ballpark. They figure they bring some veterans in, and they take the next progressive step towards becoming a viable team. So I don't – I mean, other than some guys on minor league deals, I don't see the Mets doing much. What I did find interesting, speaking of a guy that thought might have gotten non-tendered, I don't know if you guys picked up on it, but Noah Syndergaard went out of his way to say that he was happy to see Rene Rivera back. Think about that. Here's Travis d'Arnaud, top pick, been traded in big trades twice, was on the precipice of becoming a pretty decent starting catcher. I mean, some people were comparing him to Piazza. And to me, you know, I'm looking at that and I'm like, guys, calm down. And here's the star or ace of the staff talking about Rene Rivera, who's a journeyman catch and throw guy. Think about that. How much of an indictment is that on Travis d'Arnaud? Just think about that. And that was a guy that just a couple of weeks ago, there was speculation that he'd be cut from the 40-man roster. They wouldn't offer. They wanted a non-tender because they didn't want to pay the money, and they kept him on. Think about that. Let's go to the phone lines here, 646-716-8187, 914. The last four digits is 8557. You're on the air with Mike Silva. What's your name? Where are you from?
Hey, Mike, how you doing? This is Monix from Mesmerized Online.
Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Mike, my Mets Man of the Year is Daniel Murphy for making all the Herrera fans look like idiots. Oh, by the way, Mike, I like the smell of my own farts.
I'm glad. That's great. How do they smell? Do they have a strawberry smell to them?
No, they smell a little bit like my mom's cooking because I still live with her.
Well, I'm glad. Thanks for the call. That was a funny one. Listen, you guys, by the way, you guys have to remember one thing. Let's see Daniel Murphy repeat. And I didn't know where that was going, so I did. And I apologize for cutting you off, but I didn't know where you were going with that. So hopefully you were going to be nice, but I was getting a little nervous. If you had something else to say, you could call in. But if Daniel Murphy's your person of the year, man of the year, that's not a crazy. In all fairness, that's not a crazy situation because it's about the most newsworthy scenario, and that was a newsworthy thing. Now, that he signed last year after the World Series 2015, but that was a year-long, I think, agita for Mets fans because he was in the division. He was playing at an MVP level. It was a bat they could have used with the fact that David Wright now can't really – well, you're not counting on him to play third base. Murphy would have looked really good at third. Murphy would have looked really good at first and due to his absence. They wouldn't have had to go out and get Loney. I'll tell you one thing, though. That last highlight with Familia warming out of the jam, Daniel Murphy doesn't turn that double play like Neil Walker did. But I'm glad your farts smell well. They smell like your mom's cooking. You live with your mom. I don't know. I know we have some individuals on the hold. I'll get to you. I did want to go to Indian Dynamite had a comment. I'm trying to surf through this and talk. So, guys, if you put a question or comment that you want me to read, try to hit it up again at the top because the comments are coming quick. What do you think Justin Wilson would cost? I believe he's a great guy to pick up. Buy low, depending on how Detroit views him. Let me look up Justin Wilson. So Justin Wilson, formerly the Yankees, there's been some talk about the Tigers wanting to purge. And you listen to the Avila on Sirius XM radio, and then you hear, well, we're also trying to compete. So sometimes you get conflicting things. You know, hey, I got to put Justin Wilson Tigers because apparently there's a chef named Justin Wilson as I'm trying to bring him up. My profile, guys, let me make it simple with bullpen arms. And, I mean, this is obvious. This is Captain Obvious common here. But I'm a guy who doesn't just look for guys who throw hard. I want guys who don't walk a lot of guys. I do like the strikeout per nine inning. Somebody who keeps the ball in the ballpark. One of my favorite relievers was a guy named Chad Bradford. You guys will know him vividly, I'm sure. Situational guy against righties, but he kept the ball down, and it was hard to elevate. They gave up a lot of ground balls. You know, you want guys who are going to throw strikes out of the bullpen. Now, Justin Wilson is a guy that had times has had trouble with his command, but he really came out of that and had a decent year with Detroit. He was a league average pitcher. You know, he throws lefty. The problem I have with this is that he's arbitration eligible. He's not going to be a free agent for 3 years. He's lefty. Those guys are going to cost a bit. And when you have guys like Jerry Blevins and Boone Logan and to a lesser degree J.P. Howell and Javier Lopez, why wouldn't you just spend money and sign them? Why give up an asset? I just don't want to give up a lot of assets. And, you know, that to me is part of it. Let me go to New Jersey. 201 is the area code, 3524. You're on the air with Mike Silva. How are you? What's your name and where are you from?
This is Greg of Boken, and I'm from Boken.
Hey,
I got
what's going on?
Big shout out to all my friends at Mets Templar.
Good stuff. What do you got for me?
I'd like to hear your opinion about Zach Wheeler and whether, A, you think he should be brought back, kind of eased into a bullpen role. And let's just say he does that and he actually excels or does fairly well. Is he in the bullpen as a stopgap, or is he eventually rerouted back to the rotation? I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Thanks for the call on that, and I appreciate you calling in. Well, I said this on the last show. My issue from the day that Zach Wheeler and Carlos Beltran was traded for Zach Wheeler, which I'm not complaining about that trade. The Mets got themselves a high-end asset. My problem with Zach Wheeler is I think his mechanics are bad. And if you ever had a chance, and I had a chance to go to listen to Rick Peterson talk over formerly Bloomberg Sports used to have kind of some things that proprietary as well as public programs that were help front offices collect data and make decisions. And I don't know where that went. I think they sold that aspect of that business because I don't think it exists anymore, but I digress. But Rick Peterson went through kind of a quick tutorial about how to look at video from a novice amateur standpoint and assess someone's mechanics. And he brought up, I think, Jake Peavy as having really bad mechanics. Is someone basically the inverted arm scenario, you know, being late. You guys have probably all seen it. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Zach Wheeler has that. Now, it's cleaned up a little bit from when, if you looked at video, from when he was in the minors with San Francisco. But at some point I said, the guy's going to come in, he's going to have the need for Tommy John surgery. I always felt he was a guy that was going to be, and he almost reminded me a little like Sid Fernandez. He'd give you two or three good starts, and he'd give you a stinker. He'd have those days he couldn't throw strikes. So I've never been huge as optimistic about Zach Wheeler as maybe others. It was always Harvey I thought was far superior, and I never put Zach Wheeler on the same playing ground. And I wouldn't put him on the same playing ground as DeGrom and Matz. And I wonder if Gazelman is better. I like Gazelman a lot. What I would say about Wheeler is what I told the caller the last time we did the show. If putting him in the bullpen is to get him back to the big league, because he's been out for 2 years, keep him in the bullpen. Don't do this, you know, easing in 90 days, 120 days, and then go back in the rotation. You might need a bullpen piece. Maybe that's his future. That doesn't mean he can never be a starter again. But to me, don't do what you did with Jabba Chamberlain. And you like say, well, you're going to be in the bullpen until July 1st, then you're going to go to Vegas, and you're going to spend 3 weeks in there, we're going to ease you back into rotation. You're contending. That's rebuilding BS. I'm not going to curse, even though I can, because this is a family-rated show. That's BS. That's what you do when you're not a contender. You put him in the bullpen because you think he could be effective and help the team win. If he pitches well in spring training and he beats somebody out for the fifth starter job, then that's a different story. I think he should compete for a spot in the rotation. He should compete with Gazelman. I mean, you're assuming that Harvey, Syndergaard, DeGrom, Matz are healthy. That's four. You don't have Cologne anymore. Right now, you don't have a veteran that's clogging things up there. So then you got Gazelman. That's five. You got Wheeler, that's six. You got Lugo, that's seven. So seven guys competing for five spots, two are out. May the best guy win, in my opinion. Now, I'm probably leaving out, maybe there's some other veterans they'll bring in and what have you. But simplistically, that's the way it goes. So I would say, first step, compete for a job. You don't make the job, you're in the bullpen. You're in the bullpen for a reason, and then see where that goes. If he's struggling in the bullpen and he was bad trying to in spring training winning a spot in the rotation, then you have a decision to make. Because then it's become a maybe you go back down to Vegas. But now we're really taking it many, many steps forward. So, you know, that's just the way I think. So anyway, that's part of it. All right, let me take a quick break. If you guys want, put a comment on the thread. Call in. The number is 646-716-8187. I wish I could check Twitter. I got a lot of things going on here. I'm trying not to have awkward periods of silence. I'm trying to do a lot of different things. It's almost 8 o'clock. It's about 10 to 8. I'm going to stay on for a little while longer. Let's see if you guys want to call in. I'll see what kind of comments come in, and then we'll wrap up. Again, this is the final podcast of 2016. I like this. I like the fact that we can. And maybe what we'll do is I'll talk to Joe D. Maybe if you guys who don't want to call in want to send him some questions, you can give them to me in advance so then I can matriculate them into the whole situation. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. You can check out the show all the time at MetsMorizeOnline.com, SoundCloud, iTunes, whatever podcasting service you desire. We'll be right back.
Hey, Mets fans. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best unbiased and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMorizedOnline.com. Metsmerized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to Metsmerized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsMerizedOnline.com right now. That's Mets, M-E-R-I-Z-E-D, online.com, and get Metsmerized today.
Malone looking for his first hit of the year. Oh. He drives one deep left field. That goes up then. Back near the wall. It's out of here. Bartolo has done it. The impossible has happened. The team vacates the dugout as Bartolo takes the long trot, his first career home run, and there will be nobody in the dugout to greet him. This is one of the great moments in the history of baseball. Bartolo Colon has gone deep.
I want to say that was one of the longest home run trots I've ever seen, but I think that's how fast he runs.
Talking Mets podcast, Mike Silva here, almost 8 o'clock, going to continue to read some comments. Looks like I got some comments out there and go to the phone lines again, 646-716-8187. And you didn't think I was going to do the whole show without giving you a Bartolo Colon highlight. You want to know something real quick before I get to my next call? I was looking at Chris Sale's stats the last 2 years, and I know you guys are going to think I'm totally crazy saying this. And I was going to try to call in to MLB Network Radio with Phillips and Hollinsworth because they were at the winter meetings, but they weren't taking calls during the winter meetings. Chris Sale's ERA plus is, I think, the last 2 years was 114 in 2015 and 120 in 2016. Those are good, but those are not the level you expect from a Chris Sale. Strikeout rate dropped a little bit last year. Now, he could have been unhappy, bad team. But when you talk about ERA plus, and I know that's not the exactly productive way to measure a pitcher, but it puts in a ranking. A guy like Bartolo Colon is right there last year with a guy like Chris Sale. Now, that doesn't mean I'm saying Chris Sale and Bartolo Colon is as good. But when you talk about Sale coming to the Red Sox, and when these trades are made, or if the Nationals had acquired him, sometimes you don't know what you're getting. There's a reason why. Think about this. There's a reason why the White Sox, I know they got a great package, but a guy like that who's under control, even in a rebuilding situation, they were very eager to move him, and it makes you wonder why. Just something to think about. But when you talk about ERA plus and ranking players from 1 to 50, starting pitchers, guys who are eligible for the ERA title, Chris Sale's not in the top 10. That was something interesting that I looked at when I was diving into the numbers. All right, let's go out to New Jersey. 732 is the area code, 6374, last four digits. What's your name? And you're on the air with Mike Silva.
Timothy Fritt.
Oh, so Timothy, nice to have you back. Are you bringing the papers again this time?
Yeah.
What's up?
I got a question for you. Should the Mets sign Nathalie Feliz from the Pirates and trade Jay Bruce and Robert Zellman to the Rangers for Shin-Soo Chu?
Well, those, you know what, and thanks for the call. That's actually a more, no, I think the trades he gave last time were kind of out there. Well, the first one, Nathalie Feliz, I could see where you're going. He's one of, I have a list here. I'm going to give you the list of right-handers that I wrote down real quick before the show. I mentioned Casilla, Nathalie Feliz was on there, Greg Holland, guys, David Hernandez, Peter Moylan, Joe Nathan I threw in there, Sergio Romo, Joe Smith. Feliz is someone that had a good year in Pittsburgh. I don't know what he wants. I would certainly not give him a multi-year deal. And, you know, that's a name that I certainly have on the list. So that's not a bad situation. Now, I know the Mets wanted Shin-Soo Chu, but first of all, again, and I think he said Gazelman, why am I trading a pitcher? And is Chu a guy they really need now? Do they need an outfielder? I don't know if that makes any sense. I liked your first one. The second one was I mean, I guess out of the box. But you know, I don't know if that's the direction I would go. At least you know you weren't nervous this time. You weren't rustling the papers. So that's something to take, I guess, from the call. Let me go to Mike in the comment section. He wrote, here's his question. Terry has a habit of playing some veteran scrub over a young yet more promising player. Examples: Ruben Tejada over Wilmer, Deaza over Conforto, Loney over Flores. Does he do that again with Conforto in 17? Sandy expressed desire for Conforto to play pretty much all the time versus right-handers and most lefties. Does he rein Terry and his horrible judgment in for once this year? Well, in talking to, and he was on the show, you talked to Seth Everett, who covered the Mets. He had the Wayne Randazzo role back in 14 or 15? I can't quite remember when Seth was there. It might have been 2014. And when I talked to Seth, both on the air and off the air, the front office is very involved in the lineup. The front office is very involved with who plays and who doesn't. And knowing that, I think that answers your question. If they want him to play every day, he's going to play every day. Now, baseball is a meritocracy. And if Conforto, again, looks like he's lost in the forest, they're not going to just play him because they want to develop. Again, that's the point. This is not about development. This is about winning. Conforto, to me, though, needs to at least get the first. And I'm going to bring a great – here's a great example. He's got to get the first, you know, 8 weeks to kind of play himself here into a – you can't just bench him because he's hitting 182 after 10 days of the season. I mean, the players got to play themselves into hitting, so to speak. But if you guys remember, and some of you might be too young to remember, but – Greg Jeffries came up late 88, had a huge last 6 weeks, played himself into a starting role, contributed in the postseason, was basically handed the second base job in 1989, and got off to a horrible start. I think he was hitting below the Mendoza line in June. And during that period when he was struggling, especially because he struggled pretty much from opening day on forward, there were so many calls to a new sports talk station called WFAN about sending Jeffries down. And people are like, well, how can you do that? I mean, you know, he's Jeffries and he's the future. And the comparison was, well, Mickey Mantle got sent down. That's always the old ad, Mickey Mantle got sent down. And the Mets didn't send Jeffries down. He wound up beginning to hit later that year. Then he wound up having a decent 1990. Part of Jeffries, where it's not totally applicable to Conforto, is that Jeffries' issue was, and I think he's come out and said that in some articles in the recent years, is that he wasn't really comfortable at second. He was more of a third baseman. You had Howard Johnson there. He also had issues in the clubhouse. But maybe it would have been good for Jeffries if they were going to put him out of position defensively to send him down to the minor leagues to get his feel for that position. I mean, for crying out loud, if Daniel Murphy could play second, you got to think at some point Greg Jeffries would have been more than adequate. And I don't think he was all that bad. And I'm going by my memory. He wasn't great, but I think everybody picked on him because a little bit. But, you know, it goes back to Conforto. Conforto needs to be given a little bit of rope here. I don't think he should be in center field. I'd put Conforto on right. I'd put Cespedes in left. I think you get Granderson in center, although I know I cringe a little bit on that. See, I still can't see Conforto as a center fielder. I know he played better than expected. I just can't see it. And I already get people saying, don't compare Conforto with him. I'm not saying he's a bust. I'm not saying Conforto's a bust. And Jeffries wasn't a bust. Jeffries did well once he left New York. He won a batting title, I think, in St. Louis. What are you, like 340? I think if Jeffries had played a position he was comfortable at in an environment that was supportive, which the Mets were not, I think you would have saw a different player. But I'm not comparing them. I'm comparing the scenarios and the situations where they let Jeffries play through it. They got to let Conforto. Now, at the time that Conforto was struggling, the Mets weren't hitting as a team. That made it a little bit harder to carry his bat. But does Terry have – and, you know, Mike, you made a great point. Terry does lean on veterans a lot. And I brought that up. I brought it up about how I'm concerned about David Wright. I think he'll go to the gauntlet with David Wright. I think we'll be having conversations on this podcast, on MetsMorizedOnline.com, at some point, where people are going to say Wright's killing the Mets. Either defensively, where he refuses to take him out for defense late, he still hits him in the middle of the lineup. I mean, if Terry Collins really believes that David Wright's going to play 130 games this year, he's on drugs. Now, I know he's saying that to motivate and show support. He's playing the whole player-manager gig. That's his job. He does it well. He does it well, and he's done it in a way where it hasn't. I think sometimes it's given them a pass. I can't argue with the results the last couple of years. But David Wright, that's going to be a big conversation. But so that's who Terry is, and I think you're right. I think he's going to play some veterans over young guys. I mean, Loney, that was a defensive situation. I think Flores is right now profiles as a platoon player. You know, that's to me. And I don't think Flores is a shortstop. I thought Tejada was a better shortstop than Flores. I did not like Flores as a short. I don't think he could play the position. I'm not saying it's effort. So I agree with your comment, but I also think there were some examples in there. By the way, they say CJM is going to give the Mets Man of the Year to Terry Collins. Well, I guess, yeah. I mean, he was that's not a bad one because he was a big topic. I mean, he's a big topic with me. I don't want him here. I think the Mets could do so much better. Look, I'll be totally transparent. I wanted Wally Backman to Man of the Match. I think you guys would see such a difference if he was behind the bench. Such a difference. Forget all the crap you hear from the media about the off the field and Wally's an idiot. Wally knows baseball. And I'll tell you, I know for a fact there was I was privy to some things that Wally said about both the Mets and Collins about a month before he resigned. And I could tell you there were things that he said that I agreed with. And I'm not going to get into that because, you know what, Wally's out there and deserves a chance to get a job and not have some stuff out there. And even though this is a humble podcast here and, you know, people think, you know, in this world of media that I'm making stuff up, but I could tell you that Wally was very critical of some of the things that were going on at the big league level. Probably why he resigned and probably why he wasn't liked. But he never came out publicly with it. It was more one-on-one. He talked about it. So that was why I'm not a big Terry Collins fan, because I think the Mets had a better manager down below. I think the pitching coach, Frank Viola, is better than the guy they have now. But I guess we're going to see, and we'll see what 2017 brings out there. So, but Terry Collins, Man of the Year, I can't really I can't complain. Let's see who else we have here. There was somebody that I want to make sure. I just saw it. It was Keith Hernandez as the Mets Man of the Year. And someone already disagreed with. Okay, Big Norg, Mets Man of the Year has to be Keith Hernandez. That man's marketing team is on point. All I see is gold coins on my TV. I'll always remember. I still think I laugh because I remember, I think it was the 2005 World Series, 2006 maybe, where one of the local stations called Keith in from his home to do some commentary. And there's Keith, like, in front of the fire making his commentary. Like, here it is. They brought the analysis to Keith's home. I mean, how many analysts can get away with sitting in front of their fire, either out in Sag Harbor where he lives, or out and down in Florida, but he's probably Sag Harbor because he had the fire going. And he's talking about baseball. I'm like, only Keith could get away with that. I'm really looking forward to that memoir coming out, by the way. I really am. I think that it'll be interesting. I think he's a fascinating guy. I think there's a lot we don't know about Keith. And he's the Mets version of Phil Rizzuto. That booth is awesome. It's not the same because you don't have three of them together all the time, and Darling has national aspirations. And I always wonder, is there going to be a day that Darling goes national and leaves the booth? Or is he going to do what McCarver does? And McCarver would have been the Mets broadcaster, you know, until they got rid of him and he did the national. I don't know. I wonder how that's going to work if he outgrows that position because he seems to have aspirations above and beyond what they got there. So. And then it'll be interesting because the Mets bring in David Cone with Keith. Could you imagine stealing Cone from the Yankees, bringing him in with Cohen and Keith, and having Cone and Keith talking about the some stuff going on? More callers, you say? I need callers. 646-716-8187. You guys have been more inclined to send comments in. So I was a little surprised we had more callers last time. That's okay. I mean, if you'd rather just put a comment in, I'm fine with that. Let's see what more callers everyone say. Hashberry wants Granderson as the man of the year. Granderson had some big hits down the stretch. So that's not who I would go with. But this is what I like about the man of the year so far from both the callers and on the comments. Nobody went with the obvious, which was Cespedes. That's good. It says you guys are thinking. All right, let's go to the phone lines. We got 908, and the last four digits is 3027. What's your name and where are you from?
Hey, this is Andrew from Jersey. How you doing, Mike? Great show.
Hey, Andrew, what's up?
So I'm thinking, a man of the year is Addison Reed. I thought Reed had a great year. He helped us get out of a lot of big jams, and he did great in the wild card game. And I just thought he was great all year. He was very consistent, and I thought that he should have been an all-star. I thought Reed was very under the radar this year. So
I agree with that. I agree with that. What would you like to see under your Mets holiday tree?
Well, someone in the pen to help Reed out. Hopefully a lefty, and hopefully Bruce gets traded. So that's my big wish list. Hopefully Sandy can hold off. But nothing major.
Yeah. Thanks.
Have a great night. Great show.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate that, Andy. Well, and Addison Reed, that's out of the box thought. I mean, Addison Reed, when the Mets acquired him, I knew he had some talent, but he was a bit of a kerosene on the fire type of guy. And if you remember when they acquired him, he still has trouble when he comes in with runners on base. But he was lights out. He finally fulfilled his potential. He was essentially a second closer. And, I mean, he was awesome. He had an ERA plus over 200 last year, a 1.97 ERA. At one point, everybody was talking about Andrew Miller and Dylan Betances and Chapman. And I got to tell you, Addison Reed was right up there with them. Now, I don't know if that's, you know, finally him bringing it together. I know I saw some criticism of me saying Viola's better than Worthen. I really don't want to get into the whole Worthen thing today, but I'll bring up a lot of issues with Worthen. I don't think Walden's all that great, but... I guess you got to give him some credit because Reed came over here. But to me, Reed, I would not be surprised if Reed takes over for Familia. Familia suspended 40 games, and is doing so well how would you take him out of that role? Mejia lost his closer job when he got suspended. And then he came back and he got suspended again, but he was not going to be the closer again. Now, that's not Terry's MO, but if Reed is really, really good, how do you put Familia back? So, that's an interesting way to look at it. 646-716-8187. Putty, a Granderson supporter again, brought up, could Lucas Duda be the man of the year? His return date was always a big storyline and unfortunately came way too late. True, I thought Loney did a nice job. The defensively, I think he did a nice job. I think he was, obviously he wasn't the greatest offensive player. He had a couple of moments. I think Duda with Flores spotting him against tough lefties, that's a pretty good tandem if they're healthy. I mean, that's a tandem if you think about it. Let's just say Flores, he's not going to hit every home run as a first baseman, but if he hits about 15 to 20 home runs and half of them at first base, you could get 30, 35 home runs combined out of your first base position. That's pretty good. I can't really argue with that. So that I'll take. That's in something interesting. But due to man of the year, you guys are coming up with some real creative stuff. Let me continue. Let me go to the comments section. Again, if you want to give me a call, 646-716-8187. I'll stay on for another 20 minutes. 8:30 is I'll stay on for the whole time. Let's do that. DK of Gotham, I think Thor gets man of the year. He took the pitching staff and ran with it. It's safe to say he's the new bulldog of the staff. I 110% agree. Speaking of bulldog, I don't know if you guys follow Ahmed Rosario, but there's a guy that portrays himself as a ball player, portrays a lot of confidence on Twitter, wants to be in New York. You're hearing some things about Sandy Alderson. I think he was talking about them trying to get some versatility to Rosario. He's playing short now, maybe be able to play second and third. That's a big thing in baseball, and that's a good thing, but it's also something that I think the Mets are focused on. And I know that probably 2018 is when they were more focused on Rosario being brought up, but I would not be surprised to see him, especially if you get any kind of Reyes or Wright or Cabrera injury. You're going to need somebody. You figure he starts out in Vegas, and if he rips up Vegas, everybody's going to do well in Vegas. But there's doing well in Vegas, and then there's destroying Vegas. Big leaguers and legit big leaguers destroy Vegas. Look at what Conforto did when he got brought down. Look at what Darno did when he went down briefly. They're going to destroy Vegas. And eventually, if Rosario is who they think he is, he's going to destroy that league. See, Dilson Herrera never destroyed Vegas. He was pretty good. That's always where I got my little bit of, I liked him, and I didn't want to just give him away because I think they stole a really good prospect in the Marlon Byrd deal. But he never really showed me that he was, because at 800 OPS in Vegas, Ty Kelly was at one point like leading the league. So that's something to it. So that was just a little sidebar there regarding Rosario. But yeah, Syndergaard is the bulldog, and I think that that's important. He wants that role. He takes a little bit of heat off of Harvey coming back. It makes Harvey a little bit of more of a storyline. And here's the thing. I think that because of the egos of a Syndergaard and the ego of a Harvey, and I know DeGrom has too, but Gazelman seems to be a type A personality in there. Matt's is a little more laid back, but he's a perfectionist. You got a lot of guys that they're going to push each other because everybody's going to want to be the man. And look, in baseball, that's fine because in baseball, you're pushing yourself to do better than the next guy. It's an individualistic sport. That's a good thing. To answer the question, LV Mets, yes, this is going to be available in about an hour to an hour and a half after the show ends. There's a link on this thread that you guys are making comments in. You can listen to the whole show. So hopefully that's something that that you guys will partake in. I know an hour and a half. Listen, the interesting thing is this, and maybe you want to throw me some feedback in the comments section or give me a call or whatever you want to be. Again, the number is 646-716-8187. Do you like hour and a half? I typically, during the year, I try to keep these to no more than an hour. I've done some that were 30 minutes, 35. The Cespedes one, Rich Camp Mancuso, was only 30 minutes. Do you like the longer ones? See, to me, with podcasting, because I tend to spend a lot of time in my car, I don't want a 45-minute to an hour podcast because I'm replacing my radio shows with those podcasts. I love the Vertical. I love what Adrian Wojnarowski is doing at the Vertical. So if you're an NBA fan or a basketball fan, check out the Vertical. Seth Davis has a nice podcast too. You know, baseball-wise, I think the baseball-wise, I prefer MLB Network Radio. I haven't found a really good vertical-level baseball podcast. I think the problem is that the podcasts that tend to be popular are too statistically inclined, and I like more conversation. I like more implementing numbers into conversation, which I try to do here. And, you know, I used to be very in the dark about advanced statistics. I remember when I started NY Baseball Digest. I don't know if you guys remember that site or were on that site. It got its following. At one point, it was pretty popular. And the reason I stopped, it was multifaceted, which I won't get into. But it really brought me into the dimension of statistics. And I was able to incorporate it after really starting out as a very anecdotal type of writer. So anyway, yes, LV Mets, you'll be able to listen to this later on. And I'll do more of this. I mean, I'm not going to do it every week. I did this again because at the end of the year, and I thought the last one went really well, and it seems like we've got more comments than calls, but that's okay. I'm fine with that. Again, 646-716-8187. Repeat, Mike, 3 million paid attendance, over, under. Well, here's the deal on that, Repeat. The team is rocking and rolling and playing well. I think you'll see them get very engaged, the fan base, and show up. I don't think the fans were overly enthused by middle June this year. And this is what's been interesting. The last two times the Mets have had good runs, 2006 and then 2015, the attendance the following year really didn't match what I thought the expectations would be. Like, the fans really were bored into that. Like, 2006, the way it ended, took so much out of them. And it just, there was no energy. And the Mets were playing well for the good better part of 8-9 weeks to start the year. And then they had that little stretch where they were basically a mediocre team, and then it all fell apart. But they were headed to the playoffs. And I felt a little bit of that this year in 2016, almost like there was a malaise. Now, it could be the way that they were playing, where it was a lot, basically an inning where they score 3-4 runs and they put it away. But that's the kind of team they're going to be. They're going to pitch well. They're going to have a crooked number inning. You're hoping that the bullpen stays strong with Reed and Familia and whoever else they bring in. And it's very businesslike. You know, 2006 was like really exciting because you scored all the runs. You had the Reyes and Delgado and Beltran and Wright and all this stuff. So that to me is part of it. So I'm gonna say under, and the only other reason I'll say repeat under, and he just said Angels at 3 million plus 15 straight years. Well, I mean, you know, it's a good point, but I mean, New Yorkers, I mean, the weather is a big difference. You're comparing the Angels weather to the New York weather. You know, personally, I enjoy watching the games at home more than I like going. That's me. But that's just me, you know. So I know you love attendance talk. I'm going to take the under. That's my take, because I just think that – I think between weather, unless they really have like a, you know, that magic season, I think people will just wait. But they – look, the Mets fans showed up in the wild card game, and they were loud. So maybe it's just – it's a matter of getting excited over something. One of my first comments I made in the first podcast was the innocent climb's over. The only thing left to do is win a championship. You guys aren't going to get excited about a division when that's happened. The wild cards happened. We want a championship. That's what else is there? If the Mets make the playoffs next year and get to the NLCS and they lose, it's a good season, but you're still going to feel unfulfilled because it's not new anymore. 2015 was good, but it ruined everything because all the jumps happened in one shot, and they should have won that championship. And I saw some Collins defenders in the comments, and Collins is the reason they lost the World Series. But I'm not going to get into that right now. The professor, over-under, he wanted a quick over-under. Again, you know, you got another 10 minutes, 646-716-8187 if you want to call in. Over-under, number innings, Harvey Mats Wheeler pitching 333 innings. You know what, professor? I have to think about that. I want to take a quick one-minute break. Let me think about that and get you an answer right after this.
And Cabrera hit it in a deep right field. Back goes Borges, near the wall. It's out of here! night of comebacks as Drubal Cabrera provides the final jump as the Mets leapfrog to a 9-8 victory.
We're back. So another great moment from the 2016 season. I think I just have one more. I think I've done one or two more. All right. Here's the deal. So you're asking me 333. I was thinking about Harvey, Matz, Wheeler. There's no chance they get to 333 because Wheeler, I think, is going to be out of the bullpen. Harvey, if he's healthy, he'll do about 180, 190. Matz is going to come nowhere close to that. I think Matz is a guy that's going to be a six-inning pitcher. I think he's going to go really good for six innings, you know, maybe seven. So I'm going to say under. I think severe under. You know, I thought about it for a minute because I was saying, all right, let me do the math. I didn't want to just commit, but no, I don't think those guys are going to do. I don't think those guys are going to do 333. Again, 646-716-8187. I'm scrolling. I'm scrolling through the comments here. It looks like the attendance talk now has become a big conversation here. Well, I mean, you know, and they're talking about the attendance again. I mean, I've always felt that the Mets fans show up when it counts, but they really get into malaise. But even Yankees fans have gotten into malaise with that. Maybe it's the oversaturation of this stuff. Like, think about it. Back in the 80s and 90s, to get your fix, you really had to go to the game. I could watch a game on my phone. Highlights whenever I want. I mean, what's better? You get home from work, you eat some dinner, you watch the game. In between innings, you go take the dog out, listen to it on your app. You could get up and buy food that's better, probably food than what you're going to get at the stadium for far less. If the game craps out on you, it's a crappy game where there's a rain delay, you could switch over to your DVR. You don't have to pay for parking. So part of it I don't really disagree with. I mean, that's ultimately going to be the future of the game, is how do they get people to the ballpark, and that's how you see what they do. They make all these other side amusements, so it's not just about baseball. David Newman, I remember meeting with David Newman, who's in the Mets marketing department, and many times he used to use the analogy, like, unlike Coke and Pepsi, who guarantee the consumer the experience of their product, he can't guarantee the experience of the product, so you got to have other things around there. So, you know, that to me is essentially what it comes down to. You cannot guarantee a good product that night. You can't guarantee that you're going to have a good time. Sometimes I've had some rotten nights at the ballpark. Your team loses a tough game, you walk out of there. It's amazing. Something that you are programmed to put as part of your entertainment to get away from life can make you so miserable. Think about it. I mean, how miserable are people after that Gillespie home run in the playoffs? So that's the thing. You know, I go again, if you want to call in, I got a couple more minutes here, 646-716-8187. There was a name that a gentleman brought up, Tom Murphy, a catcher for the Rockies last time. And he talked about the Mets acquiring him. I don't know why a third-round pick the Rockies would trade, but here's a guy with power. Seems to be, I don't know how he is in terms of game calling, and I don't know if that matters anymore. There's like benches call games, but framing and things like that. But he seems to have a good arm and throwing at a high percentage rate of runners. That Tom Murphy was I wanted to say, because I didn't really have a chance to get into it before I wrapped up last show, but that was an interesting an interesting suggestion. I just don't know why the Rockies give a third-round pick who's a catcher. And if you listen to Joel, you know, was it John Hopper? Joe Sherman played a little game where the Mets rosters will be in a couple of years. Then, you know, it seems like a lot of people are higher on Nitto. But everybody's a copycat. You know, the prospect guys get on Nitto in the summer, and all of a sudden the mainstream gets on it. So, you know, we'll see what happens on there. Mets Man of the Year, Daniel M from the Void, LGM. Mets made the Michael Conforto. Start of the year, and he looked like a candidate for MVP award and couldn't hit, leaving everyone wondering what happened if he get back to where he wasn't able. That's interesting. Not one of you has said Cespedes. Not one. And maybe because I said at the beginning that's the obvious. But really, if you said Cespedes was your man of the year, How can you argue about how the January signing, how much buzz that created, how important he is for the offense, how bad they played when he was out, how euphoric everybody is when they re-sign him again? I mean, how many times have the Mets signed the same free agent twice in a year? Never. It's a joke that Alderson made. So, anybody wants to throw another comment here, shoot it back to the top. Cespedes and Hashberry, a good quote. Cespedes gets golf for the year. Yeah, I like that. So, 646-716-8187. All right, last segment. Let me wrap up, take a quick break, and final thoughts right after this.
Now, Cespedes is 2-for-4 tonight. Best candidate for ending the game on one swing.
He drives one. Deep left center. Toward the wall. That is out of here. Cespedes wins it with a home run. And when the Mets needed one big swing, Cespedes provided it. And the Mets win 2-1 in 10.
We're back, Talking Mets podcast, final segment, and we'll take some comments, 646-716-8187. We'll see what you guys have to, let's see, DK of Gotham, Mike Silva, man of the year. Well, I appreciate that. I don't know if I'm man of the year. Hopefully I'm a good contributor to the community, and I hope you enjoy. And one of the things I wanted to do with this podcast and what I was trying to do with these call-ins was to kind of get you guys engaged maybe in the podcast if you were resistant before because maybe you're not like listening. I saw comments, well, I don't really have time to listen to a podcast. Hey, that's fine. I mean, that's part of it. But I was just interested to see, you know, maybe this interaction to give you a taste of who I am, what I think, and some of the things going on. But anyway, I want to wrap up here. Thank you so much for listening to this hour and a half, 90-minute podcast. I really appreciated the phone calls. I really enjoyed the comments. It's a new dynamic. We're going to do it again before the off season is up. We'll do it in spring training. And, you know, if you want to send me an email, you can get me either at – I saw that I was laughing. Some people made fun that I have an AOL address. You can give me msilva126@aol.com, or you can use the same msilva126@gmail.com. I have no problem with you emailing me at either one of those places. And we're going to be off for the next couple of weeks. If there is a move of some significance, I'll definitely do something, not live, but something. And then January brings more baseball talk. And I'm really, you know, one of the things I would like to do is when the Hall of Fame situation comes around, maybe we'll do something like this again. I'm going to try to get a great guest for the Hall of Fame show. I have a lot of opinions on the Hall of Fame. I teased a little bit of that with Bud Selig and some of the comments I made earlier. I had to really get that off my chest. I'm not a Bud Selig fan. And, you know, we could talk more about that at that point. But anyway, we're out of time. If you want to check out the show, keep going to MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet. You can get me on iCloud. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. You can check us out on SoundCloud, iTunes, and whatever podcasting service you desire. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Have a great Christmas, Hanukkah, holiday, New Year. Enjoy yourself over the next couple of weeks. If there's no moves to be had, I will see you in 2017. Take care of yourselves, guys. It's been fun. Have a great night.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.